some reason that he couldn't pin down. The keeper wore the same robes and had the same ferrochemical bracers on his arms. There was something missing, however. That, however, was the least of Tensun's problems.
"Phadrex City?"
Tensun asked, sitting on his own chair. They were in one of the smaller rooms at the Ministry building, one that had once been an obligator's sleeping quarters. Now it simply held a desk and chairs, the walls and floor as austere as one might expect for Ministry furnishings. Sazed nodded. She and the Emperor hoped to find another of these storage caverns there. Tensun slumped. Phadrex was halfway across the Empire. Even with the blessing of potency, it would take weeks for him to get there. He had a very, very long run ahead of him. "Might I ask what business you have with Lady Vin, Khandra?" Sazed asked. Tensun paused. It felt very odd, in a way, to speak so openly with Breeze and now Sazed. These were men that Tensun had watched for months while he acted like a dog. They'd never known him, yet he felt as if he knew them. He knew, for instance, that Sazed was dangerous. The Terraceman was a keeper, a group that Tensun and his brethren had been trained to avoid. Keepers were always prying for rumors, legends, and tales. The Khandra had many secrets. If the keepers were ever to discover the riches of Khandra culture, it could be disastrous. They'd want to study, ask questions, and record what they found. Tensun opened his mouth to say nothing. However, he stopped. Didn't he want someone to help with Khandra culture? Someone who focused on religions and who, perhaps, knew much of theology? Someone who knew about the legends of the Hero of Ages? Of all the members of the crew other than Vin, Tensun had held Sazed in the highest regard.
"It has to do with the Hero of Ages," Tensun said carefully, "and the advent of the world's end."
"Ah," Sazed said, rising. "Very well, then. I shall give you whatever provisions you need. Will you be starting out immediately, or will you be staying here to rest for a time?" What? Tensun thought. Sazed hadn't even twitched at the mention of religious matters. It didn't seem like him at all. Yet Sazed continued speaking as if Tensun hadn't just hinted at one of the greatest religious secrets of their age. "I'll never understand humans," he thought, shaking his head. The prison preservation created for Ruin was not created out of preservation's power, though it was of preservation. Rather, preservation sacrificed his consciousness, one could say his mind, to fabricate that prison. He left a shadow of himself, but Ruin, once escaped, began to suffocate and isolate this small remnant vestige of his rival. I wonder if Ruin ever thought it strange that preservation had cut himself off from his own power, relinquishing it and leaving it in the world, to be gathered and used by men. In preservation's gambit I see nobility, cleverness, and desperation. He knew that he could not defeat Ruin. He had given too much of himself, and beyond that, he was the embodiment of stasis and stability. He could not destroy, not even to protect. It was against his nature, hence the prison. Mankind, however, had been created by both Ruin and preservation, with a hint of preservation's own soul to give them sentience and honor. In order for the world to survive, preservation knew he had to depend upon his creations, to give them his trust. I wonder what he thought when those creations repeatedly failed him. 60. The best way to fool someone, in Vin's estimation, was to give them what they wanted, or at the very least, what they expected. As long as they assumed that they were one step ahead, they wouldn't look back to see if there were any steps that they'd completely missed. Yeoman had designed her prison well. Any metal used in the construction of her cot or facilities was allomantically useless. Silver, while expensive, seemed the metal of choice. And there was very little even of that, just a few screws in the cot that Vin managed to work free with her fingernails.
Her meals, a greasy, flavorless gruel, were served in wooden bowls with wooden spoons. The guards were haze killers, men who carried staves and wore no metal on their bodies, and who had been trained to fight allomancers. Her room was a simple stone construction with a solid wooden floor, its hinges and bolts made of silver. She knew from her guards' behavior that they expected something from her. Yeoman had prepared them well, and so when they slid her food through the slit, she could see the tension in their bodies and the speed of their retreat. It was like they were feeding a viper. So, the next time they came to take her to Yeoman, she attacked. She moved as soon as the door opened, wielding a wooden leg she'd pulled off her cot. She dropped the first guard with a club to the arm, then a second hit on the back of his head. Her blows felt weak without pewter, but it was the best she could manage. She scrambled past the second guard in line, then slammed her shoulder into the stomach of the third. She didn't weigh much, but it was enough to get him to drop his staff, which she immediately grabbed. Ham had spent a long time training her with the staff, and he'd often made her fight without allomancy. Even with all of their preparation, the guards were obviously surprised to see a metalless allomancer make so much trouble, and she dropped two more of them as she scurried to escape. Unfortunately, Yeoman was not a fool. He had sent so many guards to bring her that even dropping four of them made little difference. There had to be at least 20 men in the hallway outside her cell, clogging her exit, if nothing else. Her goal was to give them what they expected, not get herself killed. So, as soon as she confirmed that her escape attempt really was doomed, she let one of the soldiers hit her on the shoulder and she dropped her staff with a grunt. Disarmed, she raised her hands and backed away. The soldiers, of course, swept her feet out from beneath her and piled on top of her, holding her down while one manacled her arms. Vin suffered the treatment, shoulder pulsing with pain. How long would she have to go without metal before she'd stop instinctively trying to burn pewter? She hoped she'd never actually find out. Eventually, the soldiers pulled her to her feet and pushed her down the hallway. The three she'd knocked down, not to mention the one that she'd disarmed, grumbled a bit, rubbing their wounds. All 20 men regarded her even more warily, if that was possible. She didn't give them any trouble until they got her into Yeoman's audience chamber. When they moved to chain her manacles to the bench, she squirmed a bit, earning herself a knee in the stomach. She gasped, then slumped to the floor beside the bench. There, groaning, she rubbed her hands and wrists with the gruel grease that she'd soaked into her undershirt. It was smelly and grimy, but it was very